So welcome to the Atom Ventures podcast. I'm here with Raymond Holt from Agnentis Consulting. Did I say that right?
Agnentis.
Agnentis Consulting. And we are here to talk about small businesses, business coaching, the strains and stresses and challenges of running a small business, and how a business coach can really help companies and individuals or small business owners to see themselves through that journey and ultimately become successful. So, Raymond, let's set the scene a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about your background and what brought you, you know, what took you from the heights of finance to becoming a starving entrepreneur and building your own business, coaching business?
Yeah, I was a finance director in industry for best part of 20 years, ranging from motor vehicles to latterly through retail and into latterly professional services. So predominantly small businesses or big businesses that were broken into very small compartments. So my last role as UK finance director was of a really big professional service business, which had 25 small businesses within it. So very much dealing with partners running businesses within a business, which meant just 25 small businesses really, rather than one big business. So yeah, as a finance director for many, many years, very people orientated, always wanted to look at coaching, training, always looking at anything that was educational, especially when building the team. And got to a point in career wise where I suppose the next step was into a really big company, or
more of the same, basically.
Yeah, or more of the same. And I think when at the time one of the big four was calling to go work in the finance of them, and it was like, well, no, I'm not really interested in that. So I was looking around, talking to people at the time, and always went small businesses, was talking to a lot of small business owners, want the skills, love the approach, don't need you full time. Okay. And then looking at the coaching, going, you know what I've always wondered is maybe now's the time to change, make the change. And thought, oh, maybe I can put both of them together. And then went to a coaching session and went, oh, this is really what I want to do. And yeah, let's see if I can't get a way to bring the two together, given that I have a coaching approach to my finance director role already.
So what is a business coach? Because you hear it a lot when you're in the small business world. There's a lot of people that claim that they are business coaches. I just did a podcast about mentoring and coaching. There's a lot of people that basically believe that they are mentors and coaches. Yeah. So what really is a business coach? What makes a good one?
What makes a good one? Because business coaches come in all shapes and sizes, don't they? And I think that's one of the challenges. And I also think that's one of the challenges for a business owner looking for a business coach, and it's to be clear about what they want. For me, the really best business coaches are like Sherpas to mountain climbers. They know the mountain ahead. They've trekked the mountain, but if you have confidence that this person can actually show you, can walk with you all the way through that journey. They'll be honest with you about where you are in your journey to where you want to get to. But I think first and foremost, fundamentally, the most important thing about a Sherpa to a mountain climber is the care of the mountain climber is their primary concern. Getting the mountain climber up and down the mountain in a way being in good health is the primary concern of a Sherpa. And I think for me, for a business coach, the primary concern for a business coach is that the person they're working with is all right. And that's their primary concern. How they do the coaching and carry the, I've got an article about it, carrying the bag, setting the direction of travel, all of those things, they're all come after the fact that the person who you're working with actually has your best interests at heart.
So is it important that that business coach has an understanding of the industry or the business or any of that? Or is it more kind of, well, more of basics, really, the fundamentals of running a business?
Yes, I think it's more about the fundamentals of running a business. I think it's helpful to have industry experience, but my own experiences, but since setting up my own business, has been it's not a game changer if you don't have it. I think it's, for me, it's been about understanding dynamics of business, and I think having a finance background helps that, and an operational background, because I was as much COO as I was finance director. I think that helps a lot. And I think generally within small business environment, I think having the understanding of the dynamics of what's happening for the owner of a business is every bit, if not more, important than understanding the business, because it's not about don't have business knowledge, it's about being able to relate the two. And I think what the danger is, you become a coach, which is really good for the individual, without having the understanding of the business to bring that to the relevancy, or you can be really good at what you do in the business environment, but without the connectivity with the individual, which then is, I think my experience has been, business owners are, we want to get the work done, but you know, fundamentally I need to have a chat about something, and it's important. And I think it's that connectivity that's really, really key, really key.
It's interesting, you just touched on a couple of things I find quite interesting, a bit of a tangent, but so one of those is, you said this, you've been a COO and CFO, I've been a COO and a CTO, and I think when you hit those kind of roles, there's got to be a chunk of what your work is. It's got to be that operational piece, understanding how all the business pieces fit together, right?
Yes.
And I've definitely seen it in FDs over the years that I've been working in, that FDs 20 odd years ago were much more about the numbers and the commerciality, and actually I've reported into an FD, which is kind of weird, right? Mm-hmm. That never would have happened 20 years ago. You would never have had a CTO reporting into a CFO.
No.
Which I think that's actually a very good thing.
Yes.
Because it ties everything, the business much tighter together. So, you know, you're not in IT spending lots of money wondering why we're not getting money, when you know that you're working with your CFO to explain to you why there's not enough money and why we need to do certain projects.
The two aspects of any business which are holistic across everything are finance and technology.
Yeah.
So you have to understand the business to be able to bring that all together. And I think that's one of the challenges with regards to coaching, is that the thing about small business, which I've established, I suppose, when I walked into it and had an understanding of, is that actually you do need to be able to do work. Because when the business owner walks out of that really nice coaching session, has got a really nice diagram on the wall and looks really good, they go back to doing your job.
Yeah.
And it's all well and good for the coach to walk out the door and go, well, see you in a month, and if you need anything, give me a shout, because if you've got any questions. But when the owner's going back to work and actually then has an inbox this high and things to do, you actually need to be able to take your coach's hat off, put your operations hat on, and say, what can I do to help? Because the business owner then goes, really? Yeah, but no, the coaching's done. Right, we've got that. Actually, what can I do? Well, can you do me my cash flow? Well, yes, of course I can do your cash flow. The context is important. I understand the context, therefore I can do the work. Mm. What you typically find is people set context, can't do work, or can do work without context.
And I think this is where it goes back to my original question of what makes a good business coach. And I think what I've seen out there, and I've seen this in the IT world where people have been giving IT advice, and I've seen this in the coaching world where if you've not operationally run a business or been part of a business and across the whole entirety of that business, it's very difficult for you to give that joined up advice. Because if you've worked in industry, let's say, I mean, I was working at IBM PwC. If I worked at the same sector within IBM, within the same division, all I know is that. Yes. And I remember often going to, when I started on new businesses and becoming the CTO of other businesses, I'd walk in and we'd talk about, you know, customer service. Okay, so why are you doing it this way? Well, we don't know. We've always done it this way. So, well, it's not the best way of doing it. Yes, it is, because we've done it this way all the time. And you're like, well, hang on, there's 15 other ways of doing this, and let's figure it out. And I think that has always given me a little bit more gravitas, or whatever it is, to kind of kudos, whatever you want to call it, to be able to say, well, no, you're not that you're wrong, but have you thought about this? And I'm wondering, you know, how much is that experience that you've had with all those different companies, big and small, especially when you're running 25 different businesses, because that is actually coaching and mentoring 25 different businesses, right?
Yeah, and it's funny, because the conversation I just had was about food retail, because I used to have a food retail background, retailers on stores, like how they view their shelves. Mm. Well, if you want to put a product into a retailer, you do realise that there's a cycle to what they do. Really?
Right,
yes.
Yeah.
Ah, and why would they take out a product that they've had in there doing X amount return every month for a product that they don't know? Mm, well, right. motor vehicles background, different conversation again. And I think it is across that, it is about having a broad spectrum. We have transferable skills and transferable knowledge.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we're ingrained with recruiters, for example, that know you have a background of X because your last job was X. Business owners, I don't think really add to, but business owners, what they want, that breadth of experience. They want a breadth of knowledge. They want to be able to you to bring other ideas to the table, but then you need to be able to do it. And I think one of the other things which I've established, which is the connectivity around what makes a really good business coach, is there's a quote by, I think it's Theodore Roosevelt, I think it is, the old American president, and it's, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yep.
And I think that's, and I think that is fundamentally where a lot, where good business coaches have the ability to first engage, to then bring knowledge and experience to the table, rather than say, I know all this stuff, but actually not relate. And I think it's, but it's a very, very fine balance between the two. And that's the best business coaches I've ever come across are people who actually can, in time of, in difficult times, can put their hand on your shoulder and say, you know what, right now, do whatever it takes, just be all right. Mm. And then when we walk out the door, we actually, I can actually share with you some ideas to, or help you based on my experience. And also the really best business coaches will say, why don't you try on the shirt? And if it's 2 inches too short in the sleeves, let me know.
Yeah.
Don't sit there and go, don't leave me sitting there, well, sorry, it's my own coach, don't leave me sitting there for 2 hours wondering whether I've got the right idea or not. If you've got an idea, by all means, put it on the table, we'll talk about it. I'm an adult, I'm a grown up, let me see whether it works for me or not. If it's 2 inches too short in the sleeve, I will tell you, but actually out of that, maybe a grain of a really good idea that does resonate for me.
Or you just cut the sleeves and make it short sleeve.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where... So it really is an engaging, the best business coach or engaging dynamic around, without separating the people, the person and the business, but engaging that holistic understanding that the impact of one does impact on the other. And that tired, we're just talking about get a good night's sleep kind of business, big advice, that does have an impact on the business. The business that isn't able to deliver on the numbers does have an impact with a small business and fundamentally at home. So it's being able to bring the two together and not be a coach, as in you've got it inside in you. Yes, but fundamentally got a job to do as well.
So when do you think, when do you think that a business should really engage with a business coach? Is that something they should start day one as soon as they've got the idea, or should they be going for 6 months, 1 month, 6 years? What's the kind of...
If you've got an inkling that you want to do something different, I think you should engage someone. And I think there are ways to engage.
And do you mean that from a strategic perspective, or are you thinking about today I'm a barber and I want to be a Uber driver or something like that? You know what I mean?
When you've got an idea, if you've got an idea for something you want to do from a business perspective, I think the time to really engage someone is as early as possible, as light as possible.
Sure. Okay.
I think the key is not should you engage someone, it's about how to engage. Because I coach individuals who want, well, one of the groups of people I coach is people who want to come out of industry and start their own businesses. It's so personal at that stage.
Yeah.
They are putting so much on the line, there's so much risk involved. Mm. Actually, to be able to work that through with someone who has made that jump not that long ago is actually a really positive thing, because that is them really holding, that really is about holding up the mirror and getting the rose-tinted glasses off their nose and really understanding what it is going to require to be able to do this. Because it's great if you've built a product that you can sell on the internet and you've got to sell 50 of them, it's really straightforward. Wonderful Amazon, right? Mm. But when they're stepping out to create a business that involves other people, bringing it all together, I think there is an element of, in a constructive way, to have that, to hold that mirror up.
It's interesting that, because, you know, when I talk to people, all the different podcasts that I've been doing and interviews, one thing I guess we've never really touched on is whether the idea that someone has for the small business is actually a good one. And whether the, you know, they should be selling their house and selling their car and taking their kids out of private school or whatever it is and focusing on it. And I think that's one of the things, because again, on a previous podcast, we talked about market surveys and assessing that, but that's actually, you've made that, a lot of people have kind of already halfway gone that, down the road once they start doing it. And actually, maybe that's something you do right at the beginning. Not just that, but you just go out and they say, okay, if I needed to do this, how would it look? What would the structure be? How many people would I need to employ? What, you know, what resources would I really need? Rather than just jumping in with both feet.
And I think it's really important, because you're absolutely right, because it's also such an emotional thing. Once you've made, I can speak from personal experience, and this one is that once you've decided to go and do it, it doesn't really matter what anyone else is thinking, because I'm going to do it and it's going to be absolutely fine and it's going to be wonderful. And if you've got any grain of, at the time, what would it actually require? So what's it going to require from me for this to work? I think that's this is the part of my challenge with regards to when you run a small business, is that I can build a business, and on paper the business can be, I need to sell 50 units at this price and this will all work out in the numbers. Yes, but you, sir, as the owner of the business, there is going to be a learning curve here for you to build that. Are you prepared to make the change and develop and grow? Because if you're not prepared to do that, the business is not going to happen. So the one thing I would say is, when I left industry not far short of 5 years ago now, I knew about building businesses, right? I built a few nice brands and enjoyed myself in the process. But I really didn't know a lot about small business.
Yeah.
And the learning curve has been a really good, really good, fundamentally challenging one. If I knew now what I knew then, it's a different conversation. And I'm sitting there going, but I knew I had to build businesses, been part of some really nice brands.
Yeah, I think this is it, where we've talked about this a fair few times, even today we've talked about it. And I think this is where the lifestyle issue comes in, because I mean, you know, being the son of a shopkeeper, what was interesting there is that was a lifestyle business, right? The whole reason that my dad did it was so that with the whole family be together. But then you see, you know, typical things of, again, because it's retail, where do you position things within the store? What do you stock? You know, what deals do you do with your different vendors and suppliers? You know, making sure that you've got all of the supply chain, you've got enough milk, you've got enough whatever it is, bread. And that, those are the struggles. Those are the kind of daily struggles of any kind of small business. Whereas when you're getting hired into IBM, most of those are taken away, right? So there's someone else dealing with contract. There's someone else dealing with marketing, and you're just kind of concentrating on your one thing. So this is where I think so this plays back to that conversation where it's really a lifestyle.
It is, and something a couple of my clients are having this. I'm having this conversation with a couple of my clients at the moment, which is to have a high performing growth business, you first need to create a business that provides a lifestyle. Once you've created the business that provides you a lifestyle, whatever that looks like, at that point, as if you're climbing a mountain and you're at base and you're halfway up or wherever you are, you've made camp, take a view at that point as to whether you want to go again. Because the next step from that lifestyle business, that business that can be 50 people, 20 people, 25 people, that's providing you a lifestyle, you're in a routine, you're in a flow, to actually go from that to something high performing growth business. We've all been on that from a industry corporate perspective. That is a very, very different place to be, and I think a number of business owners look to the heavens. Yeah, before they've created the foundations that actually gives them the opportunity to hit the stars. And I think that's, so create a business that actually gives a lifestyle, and many business owners who have really good businesses have good lifestyles, right? They have a good, and they want to go, ask yourself at that point, is it really what you want to do? But first of all, where I predominantly seem to have found myself working over the last 3 or 4 years is, well, actually, it's not actually giving, I've got to get a lifestyle first to even decide where I want to go any further. Yes, but to get into a lifestyle business means you need to change quite a bit. And your lifestyle, you need to be really clear about what that actually looks like, because without defining that first, how do you know when you get there? And the good example, given that you come from a technology background, this Tom Watson Jr., who founded IBM, says, first and foremost, design out what you want from the business perspective and life. Oh. Design them out so you know when you get to that place that you've actually got somewhere, and then build to it. But first and foremost, if you create the life, design the life that you want, design out the business that you want. Forget how it's going to sell 20 or 30 widgets. First and foremost, when you get to that stage, know you're going to get there. I'm here. Hey, I got here. This is what I wanted. Then ask yourself, do you want to go again? And I think we forget that. We get so driven by numbers. It must deliver. Yes, we know it must deliver a number, but we must sell X number of months. Yes. Why?
Yeah. So if someone wants to engage with Agnentis, like, what's the process? How do you start?
You can go onto the website and you can have www.agnentis.com and fill in the contact form. Yeah. You can give me a call. And the way I work is very, very light touch. It's a really, really nice, I think it's a really nice light way on to work with me, which is a very work for, give it away is the way I describe it. Let's do some work together. Very light, very, very defined process of what I call a 3x3 process, which is a little bit around you, what you want aspirationally, what the business is going to do, and then what it means for you as the individual. So the jam in the Victoria sponge.
Right.
And create the plan and the map, and then from there decide whether you want to go on to do any further work. So I created a framework for me that with any business owner is a, you can get off at any time.
Right, okay.
Anytime.
So, I guess you sit there and you create a little bit of a roadmap first, and then, okay, and is it working? Is it not working? Okay.
And if you want to stress test the product, sure. Yeah, me, then we'll do some work, huh? Because my experience is no one buys anything unless they've seen what the product can do.
Sure. So are you usually typically face to face or do you remotely?
I do both. Right. I do both. I like face to face. I work both face to face and remotely. I think it just depends on what you want to do.
So what are the main challenges you're seeing now when you're talking to businesses? Is it, okay, Brexit is Brexit, but...
Put it to one side. Yeah, fine. I think funding is a nightmare.
It's generally everywhere, right? Any stage of business. Asking for 5 to 10 million, then apparently.
If you've got money, you can get money. If you need it, you can't get it. I think one of the things which business owners don't have the time to do is actually to systemize their business, because I think that's create a way of working that enables them to be free. So from a coaching perspective, it's about defining what, being a business owner is pretty much like is a career choice. Yeah. Mm. So if we were talking to someone in industry about what kind of CEO do you, what kind of COO do you want to be, what kind of FD you be, they'd have an idea of what kind of, how they want to show up and do their job at work. Yeah. So to turn it on this the other way, open the mirror up, Mr. Business Owner, what kind of business owner are you? Because if you don't want to do all these things, and you need help to do some of these things, you're not adding any value to you, then first and foremost, be clear about what you do well. So for me, from the coaching side, it's very much a lot of business owners are trying to do everything, and it's about then trying to create an environment where they can feel confident to let things go, knowing they can be who they truly are.
Is that delegation or is that something else?
It is, but it's a real trust thing. And I know from personal experience that a client of mine once said to me, it's the closest a man, if you're a male business owner, gets to having that's if it's having a child.
Well, yeah, maybe.
It can be that intense and personal.
Yeah.
Letting it go can be a real struggle. Now, that's not for everybody. Some are really good at it. But it's not when things are going well that's the challenge. It's when the eggs break when you're making the omelette. Oh, but if I had done that, it wouldn't have happened. No. So around finances, for example, the way I work with clients is, look, fundamentally, the only way money's leaving this business is if you push the button.
Mm.
All right, so we can do all the rest of it. We'll reshape the structure. We'll put all the processes in. We'll put the MI in with all that. But the only way money leaves the business is if you sign it. Oh, that's fine. Right, but the rest of it we can do. Yeah. Look. So what do you need? What do you need to know to be comfortable? I need to know how much profit we're making, how much I can look in the bank, but fundamentally, does that mean we've got enough money going forwards? And where are you with the projects? Okay, so if I answer those three questions on a Monday morning, are you okay? Yes, fine, here we go then. That's what you need to know. I used to do it in industry. Ask all the CEOs I work with, what are the five key decisions you need to make? And the rest of them we'll give to everybody else.
See, I find that's interesting because I, especially with new small business owners, I don't think they'd be asking themselves the right questions as to what they would need to know.
Good point, yes.
And I think that's where things fall over quite a lot, because a lot of people come in with preconceptions of what a business is and how you run a business. And,
good point, yeah.
And they think it's, you know, they don't necessarily, they may have a structure and plan in their head, but it's as you said, when things that go wrong and are unexpected, what do you do then? And have you actually provisioned for leaving aside some cash just in case something goes horribly wrong, or have you provisioned for what you would need to do if some of your customers not, it's the one of resilience,
well, if
right?
The customer doesn't pay, because that's the biggest challenge for most businesses,
cash flow
is that you can stop the money, all good finance directors will make sure there's a dam for money going out the door, but you can't make people pay you unless you run legally, but even then still it's a time process. And I think it is about understanding, if this happens, what am I going to do? And the other one, which is with slightly more experienced business owners, is I had a bad experience once.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what happened? What? Not only what happened, what led up to that happening? And therefore, what can we do earlier to ensure you don't get to that place? Because a lot of the time, it's the kettle's hot, so I touched it and it's hot. Yes, but you had to move your hand from here to touch it. Let's break the decision down and understand what it is we can do, what flags we can put up so that you don't get to that place again. Oh.
And I think what's interesting there, I mean, one of the reasons we created Avroom is because, this is, I don't know, the third or fourth business I've started. But I remember from the very, very first business, which I don't know, must have been 17 years ago or something like that, you know, the things that stung me were the corporation tax and the payroll tax the very first time. Like, hang on, do I have to pay all these taxes?
Yeah.
And then what small business rates and all these kinds of things that come up, right?
Yeah.
And then you think you've got money, but actually you don't, because it's all coming out at
some point. Or you're making money, you're making profit, but you've got no cash.
Yeah, exactly.
The Rolls Royce, wasn't it? They went bust. Profit loss looks good. Yeah, but you haven't got any cash.
Exactly.
And I think there's also a fear. There's a lot of fear around money. Because if you're not good with money, we don't understand, not comfortable with money, and my experience has been, if you're not good with your personal money, you won't be good with the business.
Yeah.
So if your partner is the one who looks after the family funds, find someone for sure who look after the business funds, because it's bad habits or good habits from personal finance control find their way into the business.
Yeah, for sure, especially when you're such a small business, right? No checks and controls.
Yes.
So I wanted to touch a little bit on your past career, in that I saw you were working a little bit in Asia.
Yes, a few times.
Yes. So how do you, because what I'm fascinated in is whether businesses here are prepared for that Asian invasion that will happen in a number of years, right? Because essentially there's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of well-educated people. You know, if we're not careful, then we'll get swallowed up quite quickly by just technology.
I don't think we are ready. And my experience when I was, it's really interesting, when I was working 10, 12 years ago now, I suppose, in Malaysia and Indonesia and that, and there's the attitude of the Western businessman was, well, we won't educate the local formal workforce. We actually don't want them to be able to do our jobs fundamentally, because the expat's got such a good lifestyle. And you're looking there going, this is so short-sighted.
Yeah.
And so what you've got now, you're absolutely right, you've got, well, I know Vietnam, China, and a number of other countries are basically bringing back, go learn, go educate in the West and come back here and bring all that education, or we'll do what the Chinese are even doing, isn't it? Buy Volvo, buy product, let's accelerate this. It's not Japan 40 years ago. No, I don't think we are ready. And I think it's a, Sometimes I do wonder if it's just a case of, you know, we talk a lot of, talk the world a lot of things, but the world does them a lot better than we do because we just don't learn.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, you can apply that to football, rugby, and everything else, I think, at times. No, I don't think we're ready. I think you can see that, you can see the level of technology that there is in Asian businesses, and here we're still, we're years behind it, years behind. And I think it's, and I think it's about, you look into, I think what we have here is a lot of good brains.
Mm.
And it's about being able to utilize, to be creative. I think that's one of the challenges in Asia is, I think it's changed in the school system predominantly, about there's greater creativity in the school system now, in, especially I know from Japan and Vietnam. But I think here we've got really good creative skills, and I think we need to let them loose a little bit. I think whereas you've got over there, you've got the technology, you've got money, technology, you've got workforce. So we have to find a different way to work here. We just have to find a different way. And I think we have, that means that we have to think differently. And I'm not so, I'm not convinced at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think there's a lot of complacency here. And I think that's the problem. People aren't, they're not worked out, they don't lived out there, so they don't understand what the sheer scale of what goes on out there.
No, it's just scary. It's just, and the pace. The pace. Wow. So if it, so I work with Japanese, South Korean, and a little bit with the Chinese business, but let's put it in the context. So Japan took, and in the motor industry, so Japan took 40 years, built two of the best brands in Honda and Toyota in the world, right? I then worked with Kia Motors, and the Korean mentality was, well, we ain't waiting 40 years, we'll do it as quickly as we possibly can, and we'll buy up manufacturing and everything else. Well, what are the Chinese doing? They're actually buying Western motor manufacturers. So that cycle, that flywheel, so the Japanese took 40 years to create that momentum. The Koreans have taken 20 years, and if you look out the door now, you've got Hyundai and Kia, two more most reputable brands in the market weren't at the time. And what you've got the Chinese doing is, oh, well, we'll just buy it.
Yeah,
and we'll get up to your speed, and we'll take 4 years,
and then we lose the knowledge in the UK. So that's the other thing. Yeah, but anyway,
and that's what I see.
So two last questions. One is a bit of a cheeky question. What, you know, obviously on your website you say you've swallowed your own medicine. You've learned from your own. you learned from your own. Not say your own experiences. What have you learned?
Oh my god.
Try and keep it down to less than an hour.
No, no. Oh my god. Be myself. I think the one thing more than anything which I've learned is to trust me. I think one of the biggest things was, I think when I started out, I was trying to put a square, felt like I was trying, I had a really good business idea, and I was trying to put a square peg in a round hole a little bit, trying to be what the market wanted me to be rather than create my own niche.
Right, okay.
I think that's been one of the big things for me. Follow what's important to me and let people decide.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because it goes back to what we mentioned earlier, why you started the business. And if you're quickly going into a banner path that you're not on, you know, that you didn't think you'd start on, then...
No, I found myself almost being a mini-me of why I walked out of industry.
All right, okay, yeah.
Because that's what everybody... Because everyone sees the badge, goes, oh, that's what you do. That's what I do. That's not who I am.
Yeah.
And I think to trust myself more and more as I have, as gained confidence and traction, and you start to see people do actually buy into the slightly different approach. I'd say that was the first, that's the big one. And so it's interesting when you say about when you should have asked for a business coach. So John Maxwell said that if your dreams are bigger than you, you have two options, quit or ask for help. And I wish I'd asked for help earlier.
Right, okay.
Really do. And especially early on, and also to get help from, and when you do, when I had got help, to get help from the right person.
Which again goes back to one of my earlier questions, is how do you know that it's the right person? And that could be for other, it doesn't have to be necessarily a kind of knowledge bit, but feeling or kind of sentiment, whatever it is.
I think for me, it would have been to actually, so for me it would have been to have found someone who truly cared and understood me and didn't let me off the hook.
Right. Okay.
What I ended up, that's not what I ended up with. I ended up slightly more practical than that. And I think knowing myself a number of years later, that I look back now and go, actually, the first person you engage with is very important, because they set you, that sets such a high degree of the foundation. It's a bit like having children sometimes, you know, the early years when you're parenting is the most important years, because that's the foundation which they build on.
Yeah.
I think in the business environment, it's very starting out early on, especially. So I work a lot with businesses under 5 years, predominantly then, and a lot in the first three, because fundamentally that's the real time. And I wish I had really got one, followed what I really believed in at the beginning, rather than trying to everybody in the market like what I'm doing. Actually, you know what, create a niche for me, and I think that's what I've done now. And the second one is really should have asked for help a lot earlier.
Sure. Right, so last question is, if you go back in time 20 years, so I guess you'd be started on your journey, right? Your FD journey. What advice would you give yourself?
Oh God, 20 years ago. Yeah.
Don't say buy Bitcoin, because...
No!
Wait,
play to my strengths.
Yeah, that's an important one.
Yeah, play to my strengths. Go back and say whatever your strengths are, go with it, because that's what I've ended up doing. Whilst I'm an accountant by training, 20 years in FD and all the rest of it, actually as I used to love to draw, I was really creative. And just if I just could go back and say, look, if you ever get a chance to do anything that you really want to do, just go with what you enjoy doing. Be who you are.
That's interesting, because that could have been a completely different path then.
Well, if you go back to career, I was be a maths teacher or right. Be an accountant. Right, wonderful, great, what a lot of choice that is. I'll be an accountant, more money in it. Yeah, it could have been a really interesting choice at the time. I probably would have gone into education in some way, but I would say, just for me, I'd go back and say to myself, look, do you know what? Be who you are, play to your strengths, go with what you want to go with, and just have some confidence. And sometimes, and the other thing I suppose is, you're going to screw up sometimes. Don't be too hard on yourself when you screw up. Because I think that's one of those things you look back now and think, God, my God, all the learning of it. But you look forward going, with trepidation going, wow, that's thing. Yeah, it's fun. Enjoy the ride. To enjoy the ride.
True. All right, well, thanks for that, Raymond.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Cheers.